So.
Good evening, and welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show. Echo. March 24th.
Actually, bring the echo unit in. I have.
There you go. 2004. Sans the hybrid device. We're so excited to be getting soon. But before we start our show, we're going to play our condensed promo and allow you to hop on the IRC, where Link, Alan, and Patrick eagerly await your attendance. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Link from the Linux Link Tech Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, I have a question for these guys? Or, I wonder if they would review my product? Or, why don't they talk about this? Or maybe, I sure would like to support these fellas somehow. Or just, how do I get in touch with them? Well, the easy answer is to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. You can let us know any questions, suggestions, or information you might have, and perhaps even get mentioned on the show. Email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net and let us know how we're doing and whether or not you enjoy the show. And also, catch us on IRC every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern by pointing your favorite IRC client to our server, thelinuxlink.net, and joining channel Pound Tech Show. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, we're back. My name's Dan Washko. I'm here with my co-hosts, Link Fezzenden.
Hey!
And Alan Metzler.
Hey, how are you doing?
To bring you the latest and greatest from the world of Linux and the world of technology. We're going to kick off tonight with some current event stuff.
That's what I need. You know what I need to? I need to find some, like, that news music that they play in the background. Yeah, exactly.
I have to find my Morse code key.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So, anything valuable in the news tonight that news. You guys have? You had said to me today that you have a lot of current events.
Like I actually paid attention this week to some of the news stories, and I wrote them down in a little list, man. The stories, you know, stories that I thought were interesting and like pertain to like Linux and any kind of technology that we all would be interested in. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do have a list of them. But you know, don't let me preclude Alan from sharing
his weekly SourceForge NewsForge his weekly Forge update.
my Google search before the show.
Right.
All right. Not a whole lot, actually, because I have not been playing computer at all this week, really, with exception of tonight, so that's why I'm, like, really, really bad this evening.
He lies like a dog.
Yeah, no, I'm not, actually. I have the oil-smelling coat to prove it from changing my oil last night, so that's why I wasn't on last night. But anyways, the latest variant of Netsky now will launch itself without you having to do anything. Just reading, you don't have to click on the email or anything. As long as you have a preview pane up in Outlook on it, it'll actually launch the virus for you.
How convenient.
How convenient at all. It's the Netscape .p, which is the 16th version of this particular one.
Wow.
So, if you're running Outlook, well, why are you running Outlook? But I guess there are some people who have to. Get stuck in a corporate world.
Yeah, you know what? I hear that a lot. Everybody's
nobody
like, well,
has to.
Yeah, we have to do exchange. And even if you have to do like exchange for your business or something like that, why can't you use the web interface thing? You know, because that doesn't, like, automatically download and run every damn virus you get.
Yeah, well, some of those viruses now will. You don't even have to connect to get infected.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you know, if you're running the web thing, then you actually have to download this stuff. It's not, because it's not really connected to your computer at all, but, you know.
Yeah, but one machine gets
text in the
face.
Well,
you know what? As soon as you fire up your machine, and Outlook pops open and it automatically downloads it.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to be running Outlook or anything.
Yeah,
it'll
infect
your machine.
Yeah. Well, that's Outlook.
They just find you now and just automatically install themselves.
for the poor people who have to run Outlook.
They just automatically find. It goes to Microsoft Windows and just hits the damn registry now, you know? They just...
We have to watch it. We make it
wherever you are, you know, they get you. And if they can't get you through the internet, I guess they mail you a CD or something. I don't know.
Well, did you read about the new
one?
AOL?
Yeah.
Did you read about that new one that hits black ice?
Cursorily.
It hits black ice, goes through there, and prevents you from disabling or making any changes to it, and then next time you reboot, it deletes portions of your hard drive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It wipes out the hard drive.
Yeah.
It wipes out the boot sector, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's getting better.
I read that one earlier this week or late last week, and just thought I got a kick out of that one.
You know, we'd be really in a ass load of trouble if a hacker could figure out how to blow up your computer remotely.
I wouldn't be in an ass load of trouble over here, and I don't think you would.
No, I wouldn't, because, you know,
Alan would, though, because I know when he fires up his XP machine at home.
Yeah.
Hey, no.
Look out, baby.
No, I only have XP on this machine to download the upgrades.
Oh, man.
The continuous download of upgrades.
You know, we just railroaded right over top of what you were saying, Alan, but please continue on. I apologize.
No, you didn't.
Oh, okay.
I do have another one for the GNOME junkies. The latest version's coming out at the end of the month.
GNOME junkies. These are the guys that really, really dig little people.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't realize.
Is that 2.6
or
2? Is that 2.6?
It would be 2.6. Yes.
2.6.
It was actually supposed to come out tomorrow, I think.
Now, does that break compatibility with all the other versions?
Could. I don't know. I don't really use GNOME, but they found somebody may have broken into their servers. So that's why they're holding off on actually releasing it until they make sure that. Yeah, they didn't get anything compromised or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I heard they had their server was back up today by some kind of backed up server they had.
They said the article here just goes on. It doesn't really give you a lot of information of what happened. Just to say that someone noticed there were some odd processes running on there, and they brought the machine down, and I guess they're going through and trying to figure out exactly what was done to it.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the thing, security, man. You gotta, and the tough thing, particularly about something like the GNOME project or a large project like that, is you're not only protecting yourself against, you know, what's on your machine, you know, people trying to attack you from the outside, but then you got all those other people who are contributing to the project who could get compromised, and all of a sudden if they get access,
it really snowballed.
Yeah.
If it wasn't caught early on.
Yeah, I mean, all those people who access it, if one person gets compromised. Then, you know, your server could end up being compromised, and then everybody else's account on there gets compromised. And yeah.
But there's a good thing about that, though, and that's that it's an open source project.
Right.
Because we all know, and this is historically speaking, if it were a closed source project like Microsoft that was getting compromised, they would never tell you.
Yeah.
They will not tell you about a compromised product until they're ready to release the patch for it. So, between the time it actually gets compromised and the time they release the patch, everybody in the world has this thing and is using it and is, you know, vulnerable to 17 million.
Whoa.
What were you saying a couple of weeks ago?
See, you're wrong there, Link. According to the PowerPoint presentation that Microsoft showed, the process is... An exploit is identified by the developers, and it's not until they actually release the patch has been in the public, and the crackers get the patch and reverse engineer it, that is the exploit is taken advantage of. So you got to make sure you're presenting everybody with the proper Microsoft information.
Yes. with Microsoft's version of the truth.
It's not that there's an exploit and they go patch the exploit because people are taking advantage of it. It's they've already patched it,
mm-hmm.
and people have reverse engineered the patch for you.
Certainly.
Because we're all working that, all the hackers are working that much into the future.
That's right.
Yes. That's the way it goes. And that tends to be a problem, though, when you think about it, that when you have to work into the future.
I'd be happy working in the future to get a couple of lottery numbers.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that'll...
You know, this show would be awesome if we could win the lottery. You know that?
Well, yeah, that's true. That is true. Anything else there, Mr. Metzler?
No, I'm good for a while.
You're good now, huh?
Yeah, I'm good for a while. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, there was a mention on the chat about HP is going to be selling Linux desktops to businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing, but, I mean, the only bad thing about it is it's not going to be to everybody. It's only going to be select larger clients. You know, significant. I forget what the article exactly said, but it's not going to be like Call Solutions can order a Linux desktop from HP. Now, PPL might be large enough to order. Or
well, probably going to be whoever has enough money to place an order with, you know,
right.
of enough of them, I should say, yeah.
But it's a start. And, of course, there's the European Union's ruling against Microsoft as being a monopoly.
$613 million.
Were you going to touch on that?
Yep.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say another thing about
it.
No,
I was just going to mention it, so.
Well, go ahead. You can go right ahead. It's on your agenda. Take it away. I got a whole lot of other things I could talk about.
I hope you do, because I don't have much, man. No, like Dan said, the European Union. Fines Microsoft $613 million officially. And they did this, why? Because Microsoft, the European Union figures Microsoft to have a monopoly on their media player. And part of this settlement, other than the money, is they give them, I think, 30 days to release a, I'm pretty sure 30 or 90 days to release a, version of Windows without the media player.
That's
and then they give them 180 days to release the source code for this media player to help third-party companies like Ketchup, I guess, or something like that. So,
well, they have to release their protocol or their server.
Yeah.
Protocols and stuff like that.
They release all this code, and you know, $613 million really is not a big, you know, stab at Microsoft. But at making Microsoft release their code and release versions of Windows without the Windows Media Player in it, that's going to be a crimp in the old pantyhose.
That'd be good if it happens. Unfortunately, I think they said like the appeal process can go like another 5 years or
Yeah.
So it's probably going to be another 5 years before it actually happens.
Without a doubt. We'll never see anything happen, but, you know, it's good to see the ruling anyway. That was a high spot to my otherwise long and drawn-out crusty day. What else we have? GIMP, Dan's favorite utility, the GIMP. It's version 2.0.
The official release of 2.0? No
more beta? I think it's official release of 2.0. I haven't really looked at it yet. I just like noticed the news roll by. GIMP hits 2.0. I figured you would be, you know, interested in that, and maybe you have more information, but I guess you don't.
I've been using GIMP 2.0 release candidate 4. I think I'm on. It's really nice. I like it. I like it a lot. It's great. I was using it just the other day.
It's time to run out and soiree it.
Soiree. I don't know if it's available yet for, yeah, it's GIMP 2.0. 3/23/2004. That was yesterday. Excellent.
Nifty. Cool.
Yeah.
Gnarly, man.
Yes.
I look forward to getting it for OS 10. OS 10.
OS 10. for those of you who are want to run Linux and pay for it. Opera promises to make a voice-operated web browser. How you say? And this is for Linux, too. They're going to, I guess, put some patches in there from IBM's ViaVoice so that your web browser will talk to you.
Talk to you or
talk
both?
To
you can talk to it?
I could be both. Could be both. But my understanding, at least, is that it will, you know, read your web pages to you. Which, you know, to some people could be a very big deal.
That means you got to carefully code your pages toward standards.
Yep.
There we go.
Which Microsoft will break.
None of that front page stuff there, boys and girls. What
front
else
page.
We got? Sun wants to make Linux 3D. Have you guys seen any, heard about this yet?
Wants to make Linux
3D. I saw the headline
3D
the other
what?
Day, but
wants to make Linux 3D. Basically, Sun is working. You know, they just released their Java desktop, right?
Right.
Which is a really nice thing in and of itself, even though I haven't been able to actually try it yet because they want money for it.
Wait, don't we have the.
Being an
we
IT,
get some of those at the Linux World Expo?
I don't know. But, like, being an IT person, I don't have money. But anyway, I was looking at this, and Sun wants to make Linux 3D. Basically, this little news piece is about Sun's new take and their new version of a desktop that they're developing, and it's called Looking Glass. And I took a few minutes to go to their website and check this out and download the QuickTime video they have on it. This is some cool stuff.
You're supposed to be able to like turn Windows sideways on the back of them.
This is neater than hell, man. And that's exactly what it is. The desktop itself, the background for the desktop is three-dimensional. When you move your mouse up and down, side to side, you can see the scenery shift a little bit up and down, side to side. It's really, really nice. When they bring up Windows and stuff like this, guy brought up a browser window. And he's checking the browser, regular old browser window, does the normal browser window things. But, you know, say he wants to take that browser window and put it aside, you know. So basically, you know, in a two-dimensional window, you just minimize the browser window. But what this guy does is he pushes it to the side and it flips to the side like a book, you know, on a bookshelf. You kind of flip it onto its side instead of on its face. And it takes up much less room. And he drags it back, and he says, well, you know, what if you want to attach a note to this browser page? And he just presses a button, and then thing flips over, and there's a notepad on the back of the browser window. This is some cool stuff, man. And there's all kinds of nifty little gizmos like that. The guy's going through a CD library, and his little pictures of CDs in a circle, and he's just, like, flipping through them like you would with your fingers kind of thing to check out the labels. And it's really, really slick stuff. I imagine it's processor-intensive as hell, but it really was some sharp-looking stuff, man. I was completely impressed with it. And I also remember he had two or three multimedia presentations. And it was running a DVD movie and a multimedia presentation at the same time.
Oh, cool.
Real player movie and a DVD movie. And he took those, and when he was talking about flipping these things off to the side so he could reclaim some of his screen real estate, he'd flip them around, and, like, you can watch the movie backwards. You know, like the movie was contained in a pane of glass kind of thing, and you could just flip them around and put them wherever and look at them backwards, and they play backwards, and it was really cool. I can't wait to see this stuff come along. I doubt it'll ever run on anything that I'll ever own. But, you know,
you
really
never know.
Cool
5 years
looking.
Down the line, yeah.
I was completely impressed with that. It was neat stuff. And anyway, for those of you who want to check this out, and I really suggest you check it out because it's cool. You want to go to http://ws.sun.com/software/looking-glass, that's looking_glass, by the way, /demo.html, And what I'm going to do right now is I'm gonna
suck up the rest of our bandwidth.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna suck the bandwidth up, but I'm trying here to.
We're doing that by downloading.
Suck that link onto the IRC. There we go. Link is on our IRC chat. So if you're getting this later, by all means, make sure you grab the chat archives, and you're gonna find the link to the thing right in there. It's cool stuff. Check it out. Next on the list. Should we go next on the list? Next on the list is Your Rights Online. Free Swan continues as Open Swan. Some of you will make note that the Free Swan project has been having problems of late, and they have discontinued doing that kind of thing. So, a bunch of the guys got together. I guess a bunch of the Free Swan people got together. And they're reopening and continuing the project on as OpenSwan, which is cool for any of you people who, you need a open source, free kind of easily configurable router sort of thing.
Okay.
Just instead of FreeSwan, go to OpenSwan instead. Good stuff.
Are you using it?
No, I'm not. No. I don't need to. Don't need to, because one of the other links that I saw might have been right after the show last week was there was a link on Libernix, I think, or RootPrompt or something like that, where somebody was talking about using Check Rootkit and Port Sentry as their line of defense into their home network.
Okay.
And it was a good article, and I didn't really pass it on, and I didn't read into it in too much depth, just cursorily, because that's actually what I do at home. I use Port Sentry, and I use Check Rootkit. Basically, Check Rootkit is just exactly what it says. A little program you run, stick it in a cron tab if you want, and stick it in a cron tab, run it, and it goes down through, and it checks all your files for you. See if anybody has applied a rootkit to your box.
Well, that sounds cool.
And, it's just an easy little thing. You just, compile on the go. Works real good. Hasn't reported any rootkits for me that I've gotten. And I don't think I've gotten any, so I guess that's pretty good. The other thing that I run all the time is Port Sentry, and Port Sentry is... there's a lot of people who do not like Port Sentry for one reason or another, and most of them are security anal. But I'll tell you, I have not been broken into once since I've been running Port Sentry. Port Sentry runs in the background on your computer, listens to all your ports, listens for any kind of weird, suspicious kind of activity going on, like someone doing a ping sweep or something like that. When it finds something like that going on, it simply takes that person and at that IP address right then and sticks them into the host deny file. And it never replies to them again. So, they kind of are locked in the ozone out there, pinging a computer and waiting for a response that will never happen, or trying to get into a service that will never, ever respond because they're all of a sudden stuffed into the host deny file. And with no replies, so they just kind of hung, which is a really cool thing. And you can configure it to do all kinds of other really nifty things, but in a nutshell, that's what it does. And I find that it works really, really well, and I haven't had any problems since I've been running it. So, hey, it's good stuff. Shall we continue on, or you want to hit the musical interlude at this point in time? I mean, I still have a few more things to...
Why don't you wrap up your few more things, and then...
All right. Because I don't know how much stuff you have to talk about, and I don't want to take up the whole time either. So.
Talk about
I'm done with my stuff. I'm done, though, so you guys got the rest of the show, then. I know Alan's been, chomping at the bit over here. He wants to sing or something.
No, it's usually Dan singing before the show.
Dan singing before the show. You guys miss all that. One of these days, we're gonna videotape it and stick it on it. All right, what's left? Mozilla. Mozilla 1.7 beta is out. Lots of reviews. Everybody says it's really good. faster even than the last one. Faster and smaller as far as the code size. Check it out. What else we got?
1.7 beta?
1.7 beta, yes.
Yeah.
Just released.
Not running it yet.
Multiple vulnerabilities in OpenSSL. This has happened within the last week of the tech show. I know for a fact that I have upgraded OpenSSL, and I'm sure that Dan has as well, since he is...
within minutes after the security update came out.
He is on top of that kind of stuff. It's a good thing, too, because he runs my mail server. How about you, Alan?
I did upgrade, yes.
All right. Well, we're all set. With the rest of you, if you have not upgraded your OpenSSL, please do so immediately. There's a couple of vulnerabilities in there. Some of them they even think may be serious. I will put the link right at this particular time into our wonderful IRC log. Check it out. In the interim, if you're wondering what it is, it's www.openssl.org, and just check through there. I'm sure you hit the news section, and it'll tell you about the problems that they've had real recently. Again, problems in OpenSSL, make sure you upgrade if you're running such a thing. Next. Oh, that was the European Union thing. Okay, well, we can skip that because we already did that one. The last couple of things that I have involve the same company. And that's, they've been making a lot of big news in the last week, and that's Novell. Novell has...
Are you getting into, like, the embedded apps now?
Yeah, Novell is doing some killer stuff, man. They're totally, like, turning it into a Linux company. Novell is announcing SUSE 9.1, and this is Novell announcing SUSE 9.1, not SUSE. Okay, Novell is announcing SUSE 9.1, will be released. Novell is also announcing that NetWare will cease to exist. NetWare will cease to exist. They're taking those NetWare services, and they are going to incorporate them into the SUSE server, the server product that they're building. So NetWare itself is going to cease to exist, which is big news. Not that they said they're not going to stop supporting NetWare or anything like that, but they're going to wrap their NetWare services up into the server version of SUSE, I guess it is. And they're talking like, I don't know, maybe by the end of the year or something like that, they're releasing this NetWare stuff into this. I don't know if that's when they're going to kill NetWare, but that's when they're kind of incorporating everything together, I think. And there's been some big news. I mean, Novell has really been pounding Linux hard.
You know it.
In the media and everything. Yep. And
here's another one that I saw earlier. Was they're considering a move into the embedded computing devices for cell phones and vending machines. Saying they're either going to partnership with another embedded Linux company or buy a company outright for it. So.
Oh, yeah, man. They got it going on. For sure. They're going to be, I really believe that this is going to be, you know, they're going to be one of the companies to watch in these next few months. Because they just took Linux by the horn and they're running like hell with it, you know. And they're doing really good business.
This is a good thing.
Yes, it is. It is. I don't see any problem with it at all. It cannot be, you know, even in the ultimate eventuality, it cannot be any worse than what Red Hat has done with Linux. You know what I mean? Like, you look around the media and everything, and people say, oh, well, you know, I've got Linux 8.0 or Linux 9. And they're really not referring to Linux. They're referring to Red Hat. And it's been that way for a long time. That's been like the industry standard kind of Linux, I guess, that most of the corporations use.
It is getting it into the business.
Sure, well, it's getting into the business. It's been the one that most of the corporations have used. And, of course, now Red Hat is going to get some competition. It's dropped, Red Hat has dropped their community product. And Novell has picked up Sousa and is, you know, running with the ball, so to speak. So I'll be interested to see. You know, Sousa's already a real big thing over in, like, Germany and stuff like that. But
he's very, very big in the European.
You know, with Novell picking it up over here and running with it like this in the States, I expect it to be a real, you know, it'd be a red hat contender for sure. And I'm interested to see what happens with it. And I'm really interested to see on what kind of really cool enterprise technologies come out of this and what kinds of, you know, if this is going to rub off on, like, the on the hardware market, and they're going to start releasing drivers for Linux and stuff like
that. That would
like
be the best
part
right there.
That would be really great. And so we'll have to see. We'll have to see. But that, that, folks, is the news as I have collected it over the past week. This is Lincoln Fessenden and the Linux Link Tech Show. Okay, what do you think? Are we ready for a little musical interlude?
Yeah, and musical interlude.
Musical interluding is coming right up. Now, this this particular musical interlude is called the song is called "Brick of Sound" by the Serendipitous Cacophonies. Say that 10 times fast. Thank you.
Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here. Do you have any questions, comments, complaints? Don't like what Alan said last time? Feel free to email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Do you live in or around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania? Plan on being in the area some Wednesday night? If so, and you would like to join us in the studio, we would love to have you. Again, email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. Linux is a community project. Being a community project, it tends to foster regular gatherings of Linux enthusiasts who collectively call themselves Linux users groups. Chances are, there is a Linux users group in your area. We here at the Tech Show belong to the Lehigh Valley Linux Users Group, so if you hail from the area, come join us. Membership is free and fraught with fun. If you're new to Linux, then consider checking out our sister organization, the Linux Special Interest Group, run by LV Lug member Jeff Sartler. The Linux SIG caters to newbies and runs hands-on labs. If you are south of us, be sure to look up the Bucks County Linux Users Group or the Philadelphia Linux Users Group. Those to the east, there's the New Jersey Linux Users Group. More information can be found at thelinuxlink.net, which strives to be the unofficial portal to Linux and Linux happenings in the Lehigh Valley. If you find yourself in one of those rare locations that is not conveniently near any Linux Users Group, get your name and desires out there on the web. Contact the closest lugs, and chances are you will find neighbors who are looking to get together. All you need is a few enthusiastic people and a place to meet, be it a living room, basement, library, or local pub. You will meet new people, learn some stuff, and have boatloads of fun. So remember, support your local users groups. Finally, we here at the Linux Link Tech Show thank you for listening, and hope you enjoy this episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together. Hey, hey, Dan cutting in here.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions?
Oh, well, we're back.
And now I'm cutting in again.
Hey, hey.
And Dan just woke up.
Hey, hey, yeah, Dan cutting in for real this time, right?
That's it. That's a long promo still.
Wow. Well, make sure you tell them again, like, what our song was. What was it?
I don't know. You brought it up.
It was Brick of... Excuse me, man. I guess. One little root beer, man, and I can't even, you know, breathe anymore. It was Brick of Sound, again, by the Serendipitous Cacophonies. Check them out. They're obviously our new favorite for musical interludes that will put you right to sleep.
Something. It's music to get a beer by.
Yeah, music to get a beer by. Music to make a sandwich by. That's what it is. It's good. Well, you know what? Well, we said it's an intermission. That should mean it's
That's what you do in an intermission.
They don't play, like, great music at the movies when they have the intermission at the drive-thru theater. Just like, doon, 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 you know, with the little popcorn guy. This is better than that.
we need a little popcorn pop-up somewhere.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Anyway, sorry, Dan.
That's okay.
Interrupted you there for a little
bit. No.
When Dan goes high speed and we get the video length then.
Yeah, the video length. Yeah.
Movie starts
when I roll that T1 right in here.
T1, T3.
There we go. And it's great that you're going to pay for it there, Link.
With all the money that Alan donates, that's correct, I am.
Yeah. All you need to do is start driving a taxi.
Yeah.
All right.
I have to get my accent down first. I'm sorry, that will be $12. But
that's
I don't want to block.
Nice. All right, so what do I have this week? Last week, I wasn't too attentive to the show because I was upgrading my mail server and the list manager. Mailman. It's been a long time because I was still at version 2.1.3, and now it's at 2.4-something for Mailman, and an older version of QMail, I think a 1-point-something, and now I'm at the latest version. And that was a fiasco. And we went through QMail, XM, Postfix, and back to QMail again. It was a hair-raising thing because I wanted to update Mailman. In order for me to update Mailman, apparently they changed some structure in it, and it just didn't seem to be working properly with the older version of QMail. So I figured instead of messing with my Qmail, which I know works, was working great, I figured, well, let's, you know, I've always been interested in trying XM. Let's see if XM will do anything. Got XM running up to where we wanted it to, and that wouldn't work with the new version of Mailman either. It was kind of frustrating, so I decided to pop Postfix on there, and that was very short-lived because I just didn't have the patience to fiddle around with Postfix anymore, or just in anything for that matter. So I kind of tried to throw a little bit of caution to the wind. Now, everything I did, I backed up before I did it, of course, because only an idiot would start messing around without a backup.
Of course.
Which allowed me to restore, you know, the older version of Mailman I was running. The older
several times,
Q-mail.
Yeah.
So I backed up my Qmail stuff, and I installed the latest version of Qmail.
But of course.
And Mailman still wouldn't work. And finally, I was looking at my logs, and, you know, I just got to the point where I put on a Google search again through some of the errors that I was getting, and it turns out that there was a component to Python missing in the Slackware 9.1 package, and that was the fsync component of Python. Whether that's something that needs to get compiled in, I don't know. But that's the reason why Mailman, through all my iterations, was not working, because that component was missing. So I grabbed the latest from Slackware Current, which works on 9.1 just fine, installed that, and sure enough, Python Mailman kicked right up, everything was going, and I was like, yeah, that's really good. That was really good. So I was really happy. And the new version of Mailman is great. It's just as great as the old version. But I noticed something. Now, I don't think this has anything to do with the new Mailman, but ever since I installed the new Mailman, I have gotten an incredible amount of spam. And I think everybody's getting it, have been coming in. And even to the list now. Some days I'm getting like 9-10 messages that come in and get bounced from the list.
I don't think it's from Mailman. I think it's a coincidence.
I'm not. Yeah, I think it's a coincidence too, but it's catching all these things. And so far we have not had spam or a virus slip through the list, except for way back in the beginning when some spam, I think, came through when we had the list open for anybody to post to.
Oh, yeah, but this is, that was like years and years ago,
yeah,
right?
But since then, not a single piece of inappropriate mail. And by inappropriate, I don't mean language-wise. I mean content-wise. Well, non-members and spam and viruses have not slipped through. We've been lucky so far, and that's been really good.
Dan needs to be a cheer wave for that one.
Yeah, he does, man, because I'll tell you what, it has been noted that on some other lists that Dan and I participate on, that has not necessarily been the case.
Shazam. Man, how many times is that going to stutter?
Oh, until I shut it off.
Until you shut it off.
One of them things, you know.
And the toughest thing, and again, and I know on some of these other lists, one of the problems is, and again, the way that these operate, these viruses operate, is a member on the list ends up as in the address book of some other person who gets infected, and somehow that the address of the list is on there, and it just happens to send an email to the list spoofing the member's email address,
right,
and right through it goes. It's tough. That's why I've also enabled, it blocks certain attachments, and I think I'm going to increase that. And speaking of that, with Spam Assassin and Razor, I also turned on the MX lookup, DNS lookup on Qmail. So now it does a DNS lookup to verify that the domain it's coming from is actually a real domain. And that's cut down on a few of the spams that come through. I mean, I noticed that since I put that on, I haven't been getting as many. Some of them are getting dropped. But there's still a number of legitimate bogus stuff that comes through, and most of it gets caught by Spam Assassin,
right,
and what doesn't ends up by I send it off to Razor, and I also blacklist it. And the same thing, the stuff that gets hit by the lug mailing list, that they automatically get blacklisted their account, and they are forbidden from ever signing up to the lug list ever, which is a great feature of Mailman. It's like, ban this user forever. Kick him right in the crotch. I like that. And it's
getting better than that one.
Yeah, you got to get really diligent. The 2.7 version of Spam Assassin is going to have SPF checking. So, sure enough, when that comes out, I'll probably be enabling that. I've disabled anything that comes through with a Microsoft attachment. Executable attachment gets flagged as spam right away. Because if you're using my mail server and you have and you're using Microsoft, they just don't go together. You know, if you're sending Microsoft attachments,
Microsoft mail through the LinuxLink.net. Yeah. Here we go.
And we've been actually pretty good that
that does not compute.
We haven't had a lot of people sending HTML-based web mail or email through the list, so that's good.
Only occasionally.
Occasionally, but then they get significantly flogged.
They are chastised immediately.
And another
that's
thing,
one of the filters I have in the Evolution, which is what I use for my mail here for RCN. Is I just put in there if the body of the message contains, I think it's left caret slash, I just flag it as spam automatically, because there's only one person that I know that sends HTML email to me, and I know that person, I'll never get to be able to change to just sending text message on it. So I have it, you know, set up for, you know, if it sees his name in there, then it'll send it off to the inbox. But anything else just automatically gets flagged as spam, and that catches a heck of a lot of stuff for me. I had 146 emails came in. I didn't check my email in 2 days, and I just rewrote that one tonight, and it flagged like 140
or two. Yeah.
Well, I don't have that many people emailing me in or anything, but I think that took care of like 140 of the messages that came through RCN.
Awesome. Awesome, I say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to give credit where credit's due and give some props to Thunderbird's junk mail filter, does a phenomenal job. I just started using it over there for my Fastnet account, which I very rarely check. I used to just get on the webmail because I have a webmail interface that I set up for it. And I got sick of scrolling through all the spam on there. So I just fire up Thunderbird and, you know, it all ends up in the junk mail filter right off the bat. So, you know, it's just a simple delete out of there, and we're good to go. I don't even use that account, which is amazing how fast it gets filled up with garbage. And it's something I don't even use. And that's another thing that's amazing, that the LV lug list gets hit by an amount of spam. Because who the hell's going out there signing people up with the LV, on the LV lug list?
Yeah.
It's kind of kooky, but such is such, and that's the way it is. But you got to be diligent about that.
Yes, indeed.
Big pain in the butt.
Indeed.
Excitement. Da-da-da. And speaking of mailing lists.
Mm-hmm. And excitement.
No, one other thing I wanted to say about the lug mailing list, which I'm really happy with, is people use threads properly, that they don't piggyback off on another person's thread.
Usually.
Most of the time. Yeah. Unless, you know, occasionally it gets close to piggybacking when somebody starts talking about something on this similar topic that's been, like, somebody brings up an Apple. Like, the last one. I mean, it really isn't, but it might get close about somebody going in the Apple store for the first time, and then somebody said about a person purchasing an Apple over an Opteron because it was cheaper or something like that. Now, that I don't really consider that violating a thread, but when, you know, if I think it was Pat who brought up about going into the Apple store for the first time, mm-hmm. and somebody chimes in, you know, if somebody were to chime in talking about how to connect Samba, you know, their workstation
that,
through Samba.
That would be very good.
No. That, but we don't have that going on.
No, it doesn't happen a lot.
And I think that's really great. I really appreciate that. For any of those lug members who are listening. But speaking of mailing lists, I have the pleasure of operating a couple of mailing lists at work. And I'll tell you what, ever since I started doing this, it has given me such an appreciation for Mailman. Because I have to manage these mailing lists manually. As it stands right now, we run, GroupWise is our email server. And even though Novell is moving towards open source and Linux, and they've got Perl and PHP and Apache, and GroupWise is now running on top of Linux. There still isn't, I'm not sure if Python's available yet, and there isn't really any list management software like Mailman available to interact with the GroupWise platform. But I suspect that's going to change in the very near future, since GroupWise is going to be running on top of Linux. Well, it is now. And I expect that to change, but in the interim, I'm stuck running these mailing lists by myself. And just the amount of time it takes to subscribe people and sign them up, because I have them go online to fill out a form. There's six emailing lists that they can sign up for. And they can sign up as many as they want. They can sign up for all of them. Then I get an email that comes back to me. Well, when they sign up, they get an email that goes to them to confirm their subscription. And I figured out early on, before I even made this thing go live, you gonna be all right?
Yeah.
I hate when that happens. All right. I figured out early on, before this thing went live, that if they send out, when that confirmation goes out and they have to just simply reply, that a lot of people don't have, particularly AOL accounts, do not have to include the message in the return. So you get a blank email back, and I'd have no idea what they signed up for. So I had the foresight, actually, to have a confirmation pending email be emailed to the subscribe account. So now, on a daily basis, I have to go in and pull the email addresses out and sign them up in the individual list. And it's a pain because what I had to go through, the hoops that I had to go through was, and now this is the only thing I use a Windows client for, because a GroupWise client on Windows, to be able to manage the address books for these accounts, is a lot faster than going through the Java. Because Java is kind of slow and a little kludgy right now with the new Linux client and the new Apple OS X client. Plus, those two new clients do not have multi-user support or proxy support. So what I have to do is I have to go in and I had to share. I created six accounts, one for each building, an athletic account, there's a general account, and then there's a subscribe and unsubscribe account. And what ends up happening is all the building accounts and the athletic and the overall info account are all, you can't email those lists. You can only receive email from, you can't respond or email to. So in each one of those groups in their address book, I created each one of those lists in the address book, I created a group. And in those groups, I have to sign up the people's email addresses. So I have to create an account for each person in the address book of the list and then put them in that group. And I have to do this for every single list. So if a person signs up for three lists, I have to put their name in three different times.
Yeah.
Now, why not create one account with one list, a bunch of different lists, which would be the easiest thing to do, and just put people in different lists? Because I'm not managing this. Well, I am managing it, but I'm not the one who sends out the emails. That would be the secretaries in each building. And what we want to avoid is a secretary accidentally sending it to the wrong list.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to have separate lists for each different building. So it becomes a management nightmare. It really makes me appreciate the work put into the mail list managing software like Mailman. And what's the other one? Majordomo. And I believe Mailman is a derivative of Majordomo, from what I have been told. So kudos to the Mailman and Majordomo people for making...
Woo-hoo.
At least half my life a little more easy. And, from running the mail software through the lug and for the SIG and other places has given me enough experience to be able to begin to do it at work on a limited scale. And enough experience to want to curse the way I do it at work. But that's kind of some of the stuff that's been going on for me at work, in addition to at home, keeping up with security and wiping out spam. It's a full-time job.
Yes, indeed.
Full-time job.
If I roll up to the mic a little bit, people can actually hear me.
Yeah.
I'm done gagging out in the hallway. You ever get one of those nasty like, you know what, my allergies are really...
will not go away.
Yeah, oh, my allergies have really been acting up this week, and I get this dry spot, like, way down in the bottom of my throat, you know, somewhere, and really the only recourse I have is to either gag for a few minutes or throw up, and, you know, if, I don't want to get anything on my laptop, so I'll just gag for a minute or two, and then it'll go away.
That's pleasant.
Yeah, well...
Yummy, yummy.
It's, yum. You know, I'm better now at least. You know? Or I could smoke a cigar, but you probably, you know, Danny'd get all offended if I whipped out a cigar in his computer room.
So what else?
He only uses cigars like, you know, him and Bill Clinton have that special use, you know.
Be nice. Be nice. You're degenerating the topic of conversation. And one of the other things that was a holdover from last week, I think, was you were going to talk about, you know, the dynamic web pages and your new site, which is really nice, by the way.
Now, I do have a lot of dynamic content on my site, though.
Well, you said something about dynamic web pages last week. But anyway, I do have a question for you. Mm-hmm. What made you choose, and I'm guessing this is what it is, in 800 pixel width format, a fixed width format as opposed to a fluid width. You know, I like it.
Well, okay.
Don't get me wrong, but I just want to know what your reasoning is behind that.
My reasoning behind a standard width format, or fixed width format, which it is 800, in fact, you're absolutely correct, is that if I completely specify the width, then I can completely specify every other piece of content and how it relates to its neighbor on the page. I have noticed, and you also notice, excuse me, that I'm using tables on the page too. And the reason for that is I'm tired of people complaining to me that, you know, this piece doesn't fit or this thing overlaps a little bit or such and such a thing when I use a fluid width. So I just figured that, you know, 800 wide is pretty much a standard kind of thing now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just grabbed it and ran with it. You know, 680 wide, 640 wide is too damn small. I can't imagine anybody surfing the web at a 640 by 480 resolution anymore.
Not anymore, no.
Absolute minimum I could think of anymore would be 800 by 600. If it's text, you know, it really doesn't matter what freaking size it is. But... you know, on the web, I can't imagine anybody doing anything less than 800 by 600. So I just formatted it off at 800 wide and set everything the way I want it, and it stays there. Nice and centered and even in the same size wherever I go.
There you go.
Ba-dum-bum.
It does look good.
It's nice. Sweet.
Yep, it works.
Sweet.
You know, I just got, like, you know, on the top header, I was using two graphics overlays. One, a background graphic, and then my logo graphic that sits over top of it. Logo graphic is, you know, floating in there. And if you squish the resolution down, it smushes everything. And it looks like crap. And, you know, the only way to guarantee that it doesn't do that is to make sure that the page width is a standard. So... that's one of the reasons, but yeah, pretty much, kind of, sort of. And I went through and I tightened all my website up, and I tightened the tables down, and I fixed them so that they all had the standard headings on it. Like the I wanted to make sure that everything was compressed neatly, so I had to go through all the tables and make sure that they were done with a cell spacing of zero and a cell padding of zero, and that squishes everything together and keeps it the way that I want it and makes it nice and tight looking. And I changed my menus around a little bit and added a whole bunch of content that I have been accumulating over the years but just have not done anything public with, I guess. And that was it, man. Rearranged a couple things and slapped it back out there.
Excellent. Ta-da. Fantastic.
It's different.
Keep up the good work.
It's better. Keep waiting to see, you know, the LinuxLink.net/Dan page. get some
the updates. Damn page. That page, yeah, just the Slackware 7 packages that are still up there. That's some good stuff. Good old days.
And the Allen page. The
Allen page hasn't changed.
It's not Allen, though. It's Metzler A, right?
Metzler A, yeah.
Yes. The Metzler A page.
Allen is the blog one.
The Metzler A page, which is one, what was it, last month you said on your blog that you were going to
work on it. And I did work on it a little bit, but I just haven't kept working on it.
Okay, Alan. You know what? You look at your, like I look at my homepage all the time because I'm on there and I run like a news aggregator kind of thing on the side. And I'm always looking at that every day to get my news fixed, you know, multiple times a day, 20, 30 times a day at work. I'll hit the page real quick and go through the news aggregator just to see what's going on. And if I see something interesting, you know, I'll click from there and go, you know, because between you and I and everybody listening, like, if you don't see something interesting on that /.news aggregator, there is no reason to, like, go to /. Because it takes, like, 5 minutes to load the damn page. You know? So I just look on my news aggregator, and there's nothing interesting. I don't go to /. You know, same with the rest of them. Libernix, Root Prompt, Fresh Meat. There's another one that takes a million years to load. So I just don't go to the page if I don't see it on the news aggregator. But therefore, I am staring at my page all day long, and there are some things that just start to annoy you after a while. And I had to, you know, the big thing was I really wanted to make it look tight and professional. I don't know if I'm really there yet. It gets better every time I redo it. But
it'll never get there to your satisfaction.
Yeah, it's one of them anal New Yorker things, I guess. I can't get satisfied with it, but everybody else seems to like it all right, I guess.
And that's the way the cookie crumbles, huh?
Yeah.
Now,
in fact, it is.
The only issue I had with your site, and damn it, let me bring it up here a second.
It's clicky, clicky.
Dun, 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 dun.
You said something about the graphic. Dun, 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 dun.
The only thing I had was the little... Is that a GIF? I take it's a GIF, not an MNG.
For Pheasant and Computer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you slow that down just a little bit? Because it goes whipping
always,
through.
It's always been the same speed, man.
I just think
it's
if it...
bigger now, isn't it?
No, same thing.
Cool. If you same slowed it down just a little bit, it would be... That's my opinion.
If I slow it down, I got to make it bigger, though.
Why do you need to make it bigger?
Because you have to add more frames in the GIF.
But it's not going to make it that much bigger, is it?
I don't know. Make it whatever it costs for that, you know, frame.
So anyway. Make
frames bigger. I don't know. I'll take a look at it. I will.
And then it should explode and destroy your whole page after like 10 iterations and reload the page. But reload it geared strictly towards Internet Explorer.
Boom.
That would be good.
Does that mean making it crash then?
Yeah.
Hey, whatever makes life interesting for you, you know?
Yeah.
Something like
that. Is there anything else?
I think that's it. We're pretty much done for the day. Alan?
I'm done, yeah.
Alan's like, I talked my 2.5 minutes in the beginning. That's it, man. It's all over, but the fat lady's singing now. Yeah. Anyway. All right, folks, I guess we're going to call this the end of the March 24th, 2004 Tech Show episode, the Linux Link Tech Show. Make sure you come back and listen
tech
to us next week.
Extravaganza.
That's right. Make sure you come back and listen to us next week when we may or may not let Dan sing for you on the microphone before the show starts. And he may or may not even know it. Entertainment at its finest.
Pre-show
grab it
entertainment.
Right here. That's right. Grab it right here on the Tech Show. Make sure you come live because you may miss it if you don't. And as always, join us every week at 9 o'clock on Wednesday on our chat. That's 9 p.m. Eastern. jump right in using your favorite IRC.
Let's figure out what time GMT that is.
Right. GMT,
like one,
yeah.
It's like one...
GMT nothing, man. It's 9 Eastern. Eastern U.S. Jump in. Point your favorite IRC client to thelinuxlink.net and join us on channel Pound Tech Show. That's all for now, boys and girls. See you next week. I'm Link.
Dan.
Alan.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Pulling up links. Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link. Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link. Pulling up link tech show. Pulling up link. Pulling up link tech show.